What we're really going to talk about today is the Goetia, a controversial system of invocation. And I'm going to talk about the advantages of using the Goetia as a system and the disadvantages of using the Goetia as a system. And if you are thinking about using the Goetia or considering it as an idea, I'm going to lay out some of my thoughts about my experiences with it, what I think works with it, what I think maybe doesn't work so well with it, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about practical issues and approaches. This is just an introduction. If people are interested, maybe we could do a follow-up, but I thought I would cover the things that I thought were good about it and the things that were maybe not so good about it, to give people a sort of balanced look at it from the start. So I'm going to start with the top 10 advantages to using the Goetia as a system. Number 10, okay, and I'm drawing a 10 with a circle at the bottom of the board. What does that imply, magical occult audience?
Malkuth!
Right, okay. And there's something very significant about the Goetia and Malkuth, I think, which is that it is the number 10 book on the list that Crowley gives us for the AA on the short list in book 4. Does anyone know what number one is? Goetia is number 10. What is number one?
The equinox.
The equinox. Yay. So that would make the equinox in Keter, and it would put the Goetia in Malkuth. That's interesting. The Goetia, we find ourselves down in Malkuth, at least if we go along with that idea. And you know, we're in Malkuth. What do you get in Malkuth? What's Malkuth about? Malkuth is about stuff. And one of the advantages of using the Goetia as a system is it gives you stuff. It's about things and stuff. Who doesn't need more stuff? Well, if you talk to my wife, I don't, because our house is full of my crap. But regardless, I think, you know, we could all use more stuff. And in this sphere, the sky is really the limit, Tower of Pei, Tower of Babel issues notwithstanding. The ancient Hebrew traditions tell us that King Solomon used the demons to build the Temple of Jerusalem. And there's a fantastic pseudographic book called The Testament of Solomon, which is nothing but Solomon directing the demons to build the temple and then trying to get out of work by telling him other things they can do. And so he says, okay, build that wall. The demon's building the wall. He goes, you know, if you burn saffron during an earthquake, I can do, shut up. Go back to work. Write down what he said. And the next demon comes by, and tells what he can do. And he says, no, grind the stones. Shut up. Write that down. Grind the stones. And the book goes on forever, and I have never seen a fully translated version of this. I'm sure they exist, but most of the translators get so tired of this. It's like, okay, there's another 50 wretched chapters of this demon crap. Like, I can't do it. It's too boring. Like, just take my word for it. So it's usually cut up that way. But this is really important because I think most magicians, especially in the Thelemic community, really aren't about Malkuth. I mean, one local magus told me, I tell all my students, just ignore Malkuth entirely, don't worry about it, just forget about it. And I think we kind of see the evidence of that in our own community. There are no buildings that we own, there are no beautiful structures that we have that are ours. Our temple equipment, by and large, is probably not what it could be when you look at other religious communities, not every single one. And I think we're kind of struggling against that mentality of ignoring Malkuth or going along with the crap that we have rather than aspiring to fixing our situation up with that. And that is both as a community and also as individuals. People often are not very materialistic. They live in a crappy apartment and drive a crappy car and have a crappy job and don't have any stuff. That's somehow a virtue, and they're great magicians because of that, rather than losers who can't get the stuff that they really need and would make them happier. This is my, you know, contrarian opinion, but I think this is an issue. Now, I'm not advocating materialism, but one of the things about, I sort of am, but what I'm advocating here is that unlike other systems, the Goetia really is decisive about things and stuff in Malkuth. You know, if you ask the demons for something, if it doesn't manifest in Malkuth where you can see it, it hasn't worked. The magic's failed. And I remember doing one goetic operation where I said, okay, this is what I want. I want this thing. And 2 weeks later, I walked back into the room where he'd done the operation, and there was the box with that thing in it, right where we had done the operation. And I was struck. I said, man, it worked. There it is. And whether you believe in magic or not, you know, I didn't have the thing when I started doing it, and after I did the thing, I got the thing. So there was the thing. It was right there. You couldn't argue about it. It wasn't, you know, something we could debate. We could argue about how I got it or the tools that I used to get it. But it went from zero to thing really obviously. And I think that's a virtue of the Goetia. You know, you can do goetic magic, and if you get stuff, it's working. If you're getting the stuff you're asking for, then it's working. If you're not getting the stuff that you're asking for, it's not working. And you know that. You're not like, did I really get it? No. So the thing is there or it's not there. It's very cut and dry. And that cut and dry factor is important in magic. It's not unimportant. People want to gloss over it. Ah, it's not that important. No, it's important. Okay, I've written about this before, but there's a group called Sokagai International. I just met with one of their representatives miraculously on Friday. Right, Nam-myoho Renge Kyo, but this is a Nichiren Shoshin Buddhism, and it's extremely materialistic version of Buddhism, where it's been very magical. I've worked with magicians who were trained in Nichiren Shoshin Buddhism, and they're wonderful to do goetic magic with. They're absolutely the best people because they are totally focused. Nichiren Shoshin Buddhism trains them to be totally focused on their objectives. And basically, in Nichiren Shoshin Buddhism, you chant for the thing you want. You know, say you want a new house. Well, you sit and you look at the first stanza of the Lotus Sutra that the priest has painted for you, that you set up very haphazardly in your little hovel because you don't have a house that you want. And you pray to that thing and you chant over and over again while picturing your desire for your new house. When you get the house, however, which you will, and the people who are into SGI, they're like, I dare you. I double dare you. They're not like, well, you might get it, or you might not, or not getting it isn't really that important, or some people get it, some people don't. No, they're like, you will get it. What you chant for, you will get it. I dare you. Go ahead, try it. They're very, very confident, and they just dare you. If you run into people like this, they're just like, I dare you. Go ahead, chant. Go ahead. You'll see. You'll see. They're not embarrassed about it. But when you get your house, not if the great pumpkin comes, but when the great pumpkin comes, when you get your house, you upgrade your little temple in your house for the next thing that you chant for, right? You got your house, now what do you need? A car, right? So then you get the car, you upgrade again. Well, how do you upgrade? You build a better shrine, you get better equipment, and you sell your old crappy equipment to the new guy who just came in to the center, who's just starting out, who lives in a hovel and doesn't have a house yet. And you're constantly working to upgrade your equipment. This doesn't happen a lot in the Thelemic community. Crowley designed beautiful weapons and material for us in Book 4, and people looked at it and said, I cannot afford, you know, this beautiful sword, so I'm not going to do magic. And later on, Crowley saw this was happening, and in Magic Without Tears, he said, you can improvise. Don't think you have to have the ideal magical weapon. Improvise. I improvised a temple when I was on a mountain. I used my lamp. You know, I used my pickaxe for a sword, whatever. You can go read this in Magic Without Tears. And he's saying, go ahead and improvise. Well, we all said, okay, well, we can improvise. And guess what? Now this, you know, plastic thing, that'll be my cup. And, this stick somebody left on the side of the road, that will be my wand. And when we go and we do our magic, we don't upgrade. We keep using the same craft we used when we started with because we're lazy and it doesn't occur to us, upgrade your attack and you will get better results. The Nichiren Shoshin people have that down. They're already trained. They're looking forward to, and they have a kind of deal going on, you know, with the Buddha. Give me the house, you will get a better shrine. Give me the car, you'll get an even better one. Give me Jenny McCarthy, and you will not even believe how gigantic your shrine will get. And if you go and meet some really successful and, you know, Nichiren Shoshin people, they've got sake bottles next to the thing that's as big as, like, they're 6 feet tall. Huge, you know, things of sake that are like, hey, you know. They're going to get their reward. And I think this is important to keep in mind when we look at the Goetia, because we can do the same thing. If the Goetia is working for us, it will help us continue to upgrade our temple. And the demons that you're talking to, this should be one of the things that you should be talking about is, well, I need X, Y, or Z thing. And when you confront the SGI people and how materialistic their Buddhism is, and Buddhism is not usually known for material, like, Monty Hall, come on down, you know, you can get in your car. That's not really what Buddhism is known for. They say, hey, look, people cannot make spiritual progress if their material needs are not being met. They have to build a platform of having their material crap together before they're ever going to get to these higher states. We are giving them the tools to get to that higher level. What we're trying to get here is that people are moving, you know, up the level so that there is a point, you know, which is driving the construction of all of their work. And I think the occult community, by and large, has missed this. I think that we are sort of stuck where we were in a lot of ways. The idea of constantly trying to improving is seen as too onerous. And I think one of the ways to get good results with the Goetia is to have this kind of program going on, that you're part of, you're using them as part of a larger project. So, and I'll come back to this later, but if you're talking to the demons and saying, hey, let's, you know, this is what I need, this is what we're building, can you help me, this is what you guys are good at, let's go, then you're putting them to use in a larger kind of project, and that's what I want people to look at should they try to use this system. So, the next level that we're going up to is number 9, which is...
So.
Right. Now, in the AA, what work, what task do people do at the Yezo level? What is their...
Astral?
Astral work, mastering the astral plane. And the Goetia is really, really, really good at getting practice in dealing with the astral plane, because that's generally how the demons and monsters and creatures turn up, is they turn up on the astral plane. Whether you're in the AA or not, getting good at astral vision and seeing things on the astral plane usually is something that is considered a worthwhile area to develop in. You can't make a lot of progress in the higher spheres without doing really well with astral vision. You know, if you're a serious magician, if you're really into the occult, that's something you're going to have to learn how to do. And unfortunately, it's not easy for most people. But if you work with the Goetia, you can get good at it. Well, why is that? I did not start out being very good at the astral plane at all. In fact, when I was told that I had to get good at it, I was like, good luck, because I'm not going to be able to do this. I was just like, don't have any talent, don't feel good at it, don't feel like it's something I'm going to be able to do. And one of the things I noticed when I started doing yoga, my teacher tried to get me to do dream work to help my astral vision. It didn't work. He tried to have me do visualization exercises to help my astral vision. It didn't work. Every single thing I tried to do, short of the yoga, failed. So once we exhausted every possible option, said, okay, you have to do the yoga, and this is what separates the men from the boys, or the adults from the children, if you don't want to be sexist. So I, you know, worked on the yoga, and one of the things I noticed was that when I got to a certain point in Raja Yoga, you work on your concentration. And at that point, you know, you're sitting and you're staring at an object, seeing how long you can keep your concentration on that object without a break. We all know breaks from the Book of Wise, and when you're trying to do yoga and you start moving around when you're not supposed to, bam, that's a break. When you're trying to breathe correctly and you miss and skip over a step, that's a break. And you count that, and that's how you measure your progress. So I started working on it, and my teacher said, well, what are you going to use as an object? And I said, I'm going to use a symbol from the Golden Dawn, you know, a pentagram or a tattva. And he said, no, don't do this. Everybody does this. Don't do this. Don't use a tattva. Don't use some sort of abstract symbol. They're too abstract. They don't get your concentration. Get a photograph. Get a picture of a person, like Aleister Crowley. I think the one I wound up using was a 1960s Fillmore rock and roll poster of this woman sitting in a yoga position. It was like kind of old-fashioned-y looking. She was kind of hot. I still have it. But he said, you know, if you look at these abstract symbols, they don't capture your attention the same way. And I come back to this when I look at people's tourist photographs from when they go on vacation. when you're taking pictures of you and your friends on vacation, do not take pictures of the landscape, no matter how beautiful it looks at the time, because landscapes, unless you're Ansel Adams, and most of us aren't, are boring to look at. But if you put a human being in the picture then with the landscape, then everybody's like, oh, this is an interesting, you know, vacation picture, not like, get out of here. So that's also true with this yoga exercise, and it's also true with the Goetia. Because the Goetia have a virtue. They are personalities. Okay? They are not abstract forces in the way, you know, the spirit of air is, or, you know, the spirit of fire of water. Those entities have personalities, but it takes you a much longer time to see them, and they're on a different plane. The Goetia, and this is kind of why it has a sleazy reputation in many quarters, is sort of like People magazine. Right? I mean, no one here is going to admit to reading People magazine. We actually have a copy in the house now, and I read it this week. But People magazine is popular because it's all about personalities and people. It's the exact opposite of, like, arid, abstract images of abstract, arid things. Instead, it's, you know, Demi Moore and Ashton Kutcher or whatever. But the Goetia is kind of like that. And the reason this helps you with the astral plane is because it gives you personalities to fasten on. And that's why you can develop your astral vision quickly with the Goetia. Because you're not looking at abstract things. You're looking at these vivid, arresting, real, actual personalities. So that is why I think using the Goetia helps you with astral work. Next, we're in number 8. 8, of course, sphere is Hode. Now, originally I said, look, you get to learn stuff. And if you look at the Goetia and you pick demons to work with, a lot of them say things like, we teach liberal arts. You know, and there's like a whole bunch of them that teach various scientific subjects and liberal arts. I know a lot of people in the OTO who want to be in school all the time. Now, the liberal arts are not unpopular in the Bohemian community. Sometimes, I would argue, they're a little too popular. You know, there's people who just their entire life, from the time they're 20 to the time they're old enough to retire, is spent at a university somewhere. And that's their excuse for why they can't do anything or can't be counted on to do anything, is I'm in college! And I know people in the occult community who that's their idea of heaven on earth, is to be in graduate school forever. Because of that, the Goetia should be attractive to people because this is what they're into. They're into helping people learn about liberal arts. So enough of my snotty comments about that. In general, though, you learn things that are not always in books with the Goetia. And there's a difference between reading about magic and doing magic. And most of the people in the occult community have arguments over which book about doing magic that they've read rather than the magic that they've done. And if you want to actually learn about the material in the books that you've bought, you should be doing some magic. And having arguments about what somebody else did with their magic versus what somebody else did with their magic and various second and third hand opinions is not really magic. It can be fun, but it's not magic in the same way actually doing magic is. And when you start doing the Goetia, you start learning in practical terms, a lot of the stuff that you've read, and you're, oh, now this makes sense. I understand this. The other thing that the Goetia are really good at is helping you get magical books. And I'm going to just talk a little bit. There's different kinds of magical books, and I'm working on breaking down, you know, what is a magical book? What is an occult book? Well, an occult book is a book that you don't know about yet. It's occult. It's not obvious. And sometimes that is a shimmering scroll of information you can barely understand that exists on a higher plane that is not actually in a text or that you will have to write down in a text, should that be your fate. And sometimes it is a book marked $3 that's up at Moe's on Telegraph Avenue that you just didn't know about. You can hide things in plain sight just as well as you can hide them in the Andes or in the Himalayas. And then there's a second category of the really cool unpublished books that we're all lusting after, which circulate on Xerox. Some of us have them, some of us don't, some of us want to increase our collection of them. The Goetia is really, really good at helping you get occult texts, hopefully in all three of those areas. So if you want more books, the Goetia, I think, is the place to go. I have used them to get a lot of books, and they have been very helpful with that. Next, we are in the sphere of NetSec, which, as we all know, is the sphere of romantic love and sex. And I have written down here that this is sort of the attraction zone with magic. And there's two sorts of attractive forces that come into play with the Goetia gear. The first are using goetic spirits to find sexual partners. They are very good at this. One story that I treasure, I had, you know, some friends and I trying to get a sexual partner for one of our friends. And while we were doing the operation, a woman started banging on the door of the house. She is a model, and she's on the cover of a book that is still in print. And she was there just to get at the guy we were trying to help. It was one of those weird, and I've had, you know, more than one of these where you're doing the thing and the thing is happening sort of simultaneously, and she was banging, banging, banging on the door of the house to get in. And of course, later on, she did manage to break through our fortress, and they had a great relationship, and his problems pretty much were solved. So that's the first kind of like miraculous, woo, like out of the blue, here it comes. There's a second kind, and that is doing the Goetia itself makes you more attractive. And I tell a story about this guy who shall be nameless in the local community, who was hanging out with one of the new people, and, you know, very nubile, very attractive, 20-something woman. And they went by the house my friends and I were living at, and he pointed to that house very seriously and said, "Stay away from that house. That is where the evil black magicians live and do their thing." The next day, she was banging on the door. "I want to meet the black magicians. Where are the black magicians?" So trying to warn her away like this was about as stupid as trying to get rid of ants at a picnic by throwing sugar at them. It didn't work. And I see variations of this going on all the time. You know, this one person wrote me a little while ago. She said, "You know, the more people warn me about you and tell me how terrible you are, the more interesting and important you seem." I was like, "Well, you know, I'm not paying them to do that, but it certainly is, it's certainly working as if I were." So basically, I think this is something to keep in mind. Now, part of the issue is, too, if you're, you know, not somebody who's very attractive and you're not really doing the things you need to do, the Goetia is probably not going to help you. The Lord helps those who help themselves. And part of the problem that I've seen, especially in this sphere, is that people have a kind of very strange reaction to magic. And this is interesting. Sometimes when people are dealing with a magical issue, they think everything that's happening is magical. You know, like, "Oh my God, you know, this happened. It must be the result of this working I was doing." And you're kind of like, no, we all kind of knew that was going to happen anyway. Can't really see the connection. You know, maybe, but it doesn't really seem obvious. Other times, the exact opposite sort of reaction occurs. And this is not uncommon, you know. "Shelley, what are you doing your magic for?" "I need a car." Okay. 2 weeks later, Shelley pulls up in a car. "Hey, Shelley, your magic worked." No, really, it didn't. My aunt gave me this car. Didn't the magic work? "No, my aunt gave it to me." "Oh, I get it. The car has to appear at midnight with ghostly drivers, and they have to knock on your door and come out and go, 'Shelley, here's your car.'" You know, so Shelley was basically totally in denial that any of the magic work that she was doing had any effect at all. Now, I don't know about you, but if you were the demon involved with getting Shelley's aunt to give her the car, you know, you might be a little ticked off. "Shelley, hello, you know, we had a deal." No, my aunt gave me the car. So this is sort of a tricky kind of issue. And if you don't make any effort to get any of these things, including the sex partners, the demons are not really going to be able to help you. But in general, if you are willing to do this, this is cool. And frankly, everybody's attracted to people who do difficult and scary things. doing ceremonial magic seriously is difficult and scary. I will pull no punches. It's what it is. And if you get good at doing things that are difficult and scary, people will be attracted to you. If you are afraid of doing things that are difficult and scary because you are weak and lame, no one will be attracted to you. You will be boring, and you will not have sexual partners by and large. So that's just something to keep in mind. Next is sphere number 6, Tiferet. Now often, I don't know if you guys have heard this, but I've heard this a lot. People say, don't do demonic magic or work with a Goetia unless you have your HGA experience. Anyone heard this? I've heard this quite a bit. People say this all the time. And I think this is a load of crap. I think this is a bad sort of like scarifying thing that people do. But I understand part of it, which is unless you really know what your will is, you're not going to be able to direct anybody else around. And if your will is figuring out what your will is, then you can start to direct people around. But having a very firm will, or even a very firm want, is almost essential in dealing with this kind of magic. And Tiferet is a great place, when you're working with the Goetia, to understand that and to have that crisis. And I think if everybody had that crisis, like, what the hell are you here for? That would be a wonderful crisis to have. So yes, it is scary, it is difficult, but using the Goetia can make you kind of have that crisis and say, what am I really here for and what do I really want? And I like to ask people to think about the kind of bosses they've had in the past. You know, have you ever worked for someone who really didn't know what they wanted and was trying to give you all sorts of contradictory information because they didn't really have a plan? Or a boss who really wasn't interested in what the whole organization was doing but was really trying to goof off all the time and have you do all the work? Now, in general, most of us do not work consistently to sabotage such a boss. I mean, we don't work overtime to like, I'm going to screw that guy. But if something bad happens to that person in the course of their own screw-ups because they don't know what they're really doing, do we get upset? No. Will we rush in to save them at the moment that their karma catches up with them? Probably we will find something else we really need to do when that crap goes down. So this is something you need to keep in mind. What kind of boss are you? And what kind of boss do you want to be? And if you have transcendental goals and a real program that you're going to be consistent and that you're going to stick to, you will be an inspiring boss that people will forgive mistakes, put up with your crap, deal with your idiosyncrasies, because overall they are inspired to go on and to do important things. Dealing with demons is no different from dealing with the usual subordinates at any job in America. Now, if you can't manage people effectively on that level, you cannot manage the demons well. But if you have a plan and you behave responsibly and, you know, forthrightly about it, then you can do pretty well. And using the Goetia will sort of force that on you. Because the demons will say, what is your plan? You know, why am I here? What do you want me to do? And if you're like, I don't really know, then you're going to have to find out. So that's good. Number 5 is Pakad, or fear, some of which we've touched on. What's the difference between a baseball player and a baseball fan? Now, pro ball people play baseball. That's their job. They have this experience of it. It is very different from the experience of people coming in to watch them play. Real magicians who actually do ceremonial magic and invocation have a very, very different life and way of approaching magic than magical fans do, or people who read magical books, sort of like magical pornography. Right? They don't actually have sex, they use pornography, they don't actually do magic, they read books on the occult. This is not uncommon. Stepping up to the plate and actually starting to do serious magic like this makes you a baseball player. It doesn't make you a baseball fan. And the other issue, too, is I don't know if you've seen this around. I've seen a lot of this around when I visit people that are involved in the occult. You'll come over to their house and they'll be like, this is our magical sword. And they'll show it off. And then we'll go back in this little place in their cabinet, you know, when for some other guest to come by. And they'll be like, this is my magical wand. And they'll bring it, and sometimes they're really nice. You know, I saw a wand a while ago that was gorgeous. But It was like something they bought on TV or at a store or something. It wasn't a real tool they were using in their house. Now, the same people usually don't show you their vacuum cleaner, or they don't show you their hammer that they use because they're nailing all the time. Sometimes they might. If you're really into tools, you might go down and you'll see, oh, yeah, this guy's got a great tool set. But it's not that sort of like show-off item, like, here it is. And for most people, magical tools are props. They're curios. They're collector's items. They're not tools in the same way they are when you actually start using them. And if you do the Goetia, suddenly you're going to find, I'm using my dagger to do stuff, or I'm using my wand to do stuff. And it stops being this sort of collector's item, kitschy, sort of collectible, and more something that's a real tool that you really use. And that, I think, is extremely important. And that's something I think we should all want. We shouldn't want to be these people who are sort of playing at being magicians by collecting this stuff, but actually doing it and using it. The next stage is 4, which is Hessen. Now, in this sphere, we like to talk about leadership. Learning to direct and manipulate occult forces to specific and detailed ends will make you a leader. Because these creatures are coming to you, or you're bringing them to you, and you are giving them jobs and direction. Now, oftentimes, we go through life, we're not really leaders the same way. But now, say you have, like, a demon with 144 servitors, or you know how many, and they're looking to you. What do I do? What do I tell these guys to do? And suddenly, you become a leader, and you have to have goals, you have to have plans, you actually have to start thinking strategically, because if you're really building the temple, the thing you're asking the demons to do now is going to be linked to the thing you're going to ask them to do next month, or the month after, or the week after. All these things are connected. This is related to the charisma issue that happens in Netzach, but it's more wide-ranging. The magical community needs leaders with experience in magic. Most of our current leadership is seriously flawed in this respect. They don't know anything about magic. There, I said it. They don't. Not in the way that Crowley did, certainly. Since the Goetia teaches leadership skills, because you are dealing with powerful and mysterious forces with concrete ends in mind, it is going to be useful in training future leaders. Be one of them. And I would much rather have people coming into power in the occult community, whether it's in the OTO or whatever group, who have like solid experience in doing invocations and serious magical work than people who've skipped all of that and are presenting their swords and their cups in like fancy-pantsy little display cases in their homes or whatever. Okay. Now, this kind of goes back to the boss issue. You know, what's a good boss? What's a bad boss? We've all had really bad bosses. What's a good boss? You know, good bosses are people who lead through experience and also with transcendental goals in mind. I had a boss who drove me crazy most of the time, but if he called me up tomorrow and asked me to come and do something, I'd probably do it just because he has the charisma, he has the motive, he has the drive, and when he's around, you want to get involved in whatever it is he wants you to do. He's that interesting, he's that exciting, he's that purposeful. The occult community doesn't have a lot of people like that in it, okay? Across the board, we don't. We need them, okay? So using the Goetia will help you practice with that sort of motivation and leadership, because you will see transcendental goals that will help you be the sort of person who can look beyond little petty issues and your own personal nonsense and say, hey, look, put that aside. This is where we're going. So keep that in mind. The next issue I want to talk about is understanding. Do you really want to understand the magical universe? Well, what are you going to do that? Is it going to be reading a lot of books by other people who claim to have understood it? Sure, that's going to be important. But you're also going to have to practice. You're also going to have to test what's in those books. The Goetia enables you to do all of that stuff. It enables you to ask questions and through a praxis actually understand something. One of my teachers keeps pointing out when we talk about various issues, they don't have a praxis of testing. You know, with the Goetia, you know, you can say, okay, Keith, I want X book. Do I have a praxis of trying to get it? Yes, I do. I can call up a demon, summon it, interrogate it, talk to it, make a deal with it, and see if I can get the book. other people, you know, they don't have that praxis of trying to put all of this occult stuff into any sort of form other than speculation and airy theorizing. So the Goetia really helps you understand the magical universe through praxis. Now, one of the other interesting things I've noticed, and maybe other people have picked up on this too, is the banishing that goes on in the Thelema community, but probably throughout the whole occult world as well. People banish like crazy. They'll banish at a drop of a hat, right? I don't know if you know y'all have seen this, Marlene. I'm sure you have. But like, you know, people will get up. Can you do a banishing? I'll do a banishing. People banish all the time. I'm feeling nervous today. I have a little anxiety. I'm going to banish. Okay, banish. Hey, did Shelly banish? Yeah, Shelly banished. Well, let Steve banish. Okay, Charlie. Charlie wants to banish. Oh, man, Charlie's banishing sucks. Yeah, but he needs to improve it. So let him do it again. Let him do it again. No, I can't see it again. I can't see it. Let Shelly do it. Shelly's banishings are great. And all we hear, banish, banish, banish. Like, people, they banish like crazy. When does anyone ever invoke?
Constantly.
Well, you're supposed to. But often, the community does not. And I was talking to a friend of mine, and I said, why will people banish at the drop of a hat, anytime, all the time, but not invoke? And he said, when you invoke, you go off the script. You do your banishing ritual, and it's over, and you have a nice feeling. Ah, I've banished. Okay. Now, there's a problem with this, in that too much banishing and no invoking means everything starts to go. Yeah, I know people who banish constantly. They banish all the time. They banish four or five times a day. We're not going to say any names. And they started losing everything. They banished their car. They banished their job. They banished their girlfriend. They banished their furniture. They banished all their money. That went really quick. And they're still banishing. And like you kind of look at them a little bit, and like you can feel the suction. It's just pulling everything. And you're like, wow, what the hell has stayed? You know, man, that crappy house is much stronger than I thought it would be. I thought they'd be out on the street and homeless, and now some of them are. You know, their banishing has been that successful. So I'm not saying don't banish. I'm saying balance it with some invocation. Banish, but invoke. Banish, but invoke. Well, what's the problem? In invocation, especially with Goetic invocation, you do the script, you do the invocation, and then you wait. That's the problem. Because you have to go off the script. What's going to happen? You don't have control. Now, you know, the ball is in the ballpark of whoever you've invoked. And that's scary to people. They don't want to give up that kind of control. So we see a lot of banishing. We don't see a lot of invocation. The other thing that the Goetia enables you to do for understanding is actually use things like 777. You know, the Goetia is basically based on planetary magic. Each one of the Goetic seals is based on a planetary metal. So in planning your invocations, you can tag a lot of planetary attributions to the invocation, and you can work on developing that and testing 777. Most of the time, what do people use 777 for? I added up my dad's license plate. Let me go check it in Sephiroth. You know, this is just crap, right? Huh. Look, you know, my social security card adds up to that. It's like, oh, who cares? Whereas with this, you actually have a process and a praxis to apply 777 and these other Crowley books too. Now, in larger term goals, you know, I touched on this earlier because all these things keep coming back to each other, but you know, what do you really want out of life? And what are you here for? I had one teacher ask me, what are you here for? Now, after how many years, 15 years in the occult community, hey, I'm a big shot. I've been doing this shit for a long time. What are you here for? I was stunned. It's a real crisis moment for me. I couldn't come up with an answer fast enough for him. I was very unhappy. And I went through a period of like 2 or 3 days where I was just like, shit, I have to give this guy an answer. You know, this is really unhappy making for me. I don't like this kind of stress. The Goetia really, really offers you ways of resolving that kind of problem in practice. It's not something that, you know, you just have to think about or consider or read about or guess at, but you have to test, because the demons will test you on this to see whether you're really sincere about what you want and what you're really here for or not. So what are your goals? Where do you want to be 5 or 10 years from now? I hate to say this, but most of the people in the occult community bounce around without any goals at all. They're here, they're there, they're moving here, they're moving there. If they stay in the same place, they don't change. They don't get any better, they don't get any happier. Their lives are not lives that I really want to emulate. I don't look up to these people and say, I want my life to be like that. they're sad and pathetic a lot of the time. So are we going to go along with this, or are we really going to have goals in the short time that we all have here? I think the Goetia, because they look for instruction, prompt you to come up with what your goals are. And I know I sound a little Amway-ish here. I don't mean to. Sorry. But the Goetia is that sort of cheesy part of the occult community. I mean, it really is that location for the S, Amway, Nichiren Shoshin kind of thing. And that's not always bad. That's just what I'm suggesting. Okay, so it's a start. Much astral work is a trivial distraction when seen from the bigger picture. Greed for material wealth, cheap sex, or even insider knowledge is transitory. But unless you start beginning somewhere, you will never get anywhere. Using the Goetia opens up a lot of doors. The doors to practical, applied magic, the door to the astral and its mastery, the doors to leadership and charisma, the door to choosing what you really want out of life, the door to understanding an occult system. No one has to get stuck in one place, but if you don't move forward, you are stuck already. I am acknowledging that there is that cheesy, materialistic part of this, and it's a trap. But unless you get started somewhere and you start working with tangible issues, I think you're going to have problems. Those are the top 10 advantages. Let us now move on to the disadvantages of using the Goetia as a system. Number 10, all living things must what? Poop.
Oh.
Poop. Some living things live so long, I don't know. But I know every living thing must poop. The Goetia is a living system of magic, which means it poops. And if you use it, you will have to deal with its poop. Now, a good magician uses his poop for fertilizer on his rose garden. See Lever 418, the 13th heir. But this process becomes messy until one learns how to deal with it. You know, new parents have a bigger problem with poopy diapers than experienced parents who've had more than one kid. They get much more down with it. But, you know, poop is poop. Goetic magic produces poop. And this is one of the reasons why it has a really bad reputation. But every other system of magic produces poop, too. If we go up to Marin County to the Dianic Huckleberry Coven, their system is going to poop. It does. It poops. And they may deny it. No, we have no poop here.
Believe me,
it poops, okay? And most, you know, people that are really involved with one system act like their system's poop doesn't smell. It does. But, you know, so look, if you guys say, I can't handle goetic poop, do not use the Goetia. It's a bad system for you. If you're, like, consigned to the fact that any system I'm going to use isn't going to be poop, then you should try checking it out. But it will poop. What is the poop that I'm talking about? It's the shells from the system. It's negative consequences. It's bad problems. It's, you know, people being mad at you. It's irrational stuff. Those are the poopy things, and you're going to have to, like, deal with it. But yes, all magical systems poop, so think about that. Next, number 9, is the astral plane again. The astral plane and the pure vision of it is different from most ordinary experiences. The threshold to the astral plane can be scary to cross. This is why so many people avoid it. Now, I have found myself very, very, very rarely agreeing with Jerry Cornelius about any ceremonial magic issue ever. But he says one thing in Red Flame number 7 that I totally agree with, which is if you don't start working on your astral work when you're young, it's going to be really tough to do it as you get older, because as you age, you build up carapaces to keep the astral plane out. And you have to break through those, and it becomes significantly tougher as you get older. If you're in your early 20s, learning how to scry is a lot easier than learning it when you're in your early 40s. Jerry's basic attitude is, like, give up after a certain age, but, you know, whether I haven't tested that well enough, but I think he's absolutely right about how hard it is when you reach a certain age. People clinging to certain fears are going to be scared, and it's tough to do, and it's scary. But moving on to Hode, getting wrapped up in the astral plane, once you're in it, it basically can degenerate into an ongoing game of Dungeons and Dragons. I mean, I've seen people who really get into the astral plane, and you can see this also with Sir John Dee and Edward Kelly sometimes too. You know, these are people that had astral work that's so great, we're still studying it. You know, hundreds of years later, it's more significant than anything any idiot has produced since 1970. Let's be honest, okay? And you see a lot of them, chasing down minutiae things. And if you get into the astral plane, you are not going to be John Dee and Edward Kelly off the bat most of the time. And, you know, you may find yourself walking around. We saw a red dog, and the dog had on a black bandana. On that black bandana was a napkin ring with a G on it. Now, what does that mean, dog? And you're like, you can get lost in that sort of thing forever. It's a total trap. And it seems fascinating and interesting at the time, and everybody else is kind of looking at you like, Okay, number seven, NedSat. Some problems here. What is the opposite of attraction? Fear and terror, right? While one may become more charismatic, one can also become more frightening. Goetic magicians can, without meaning to, project an aura of menace and occult diabolism. While this is quite a turn-on to many of the nubile 20-something women mentioned earlier, it can be problematic in other circumstances. One sometimes has to work overtime to appear harmless, which can be draining. And one of the best occult people I've ever met has to spend a gigantic amount of energy looking harmless. Because if he didn't, everybody would be running in terror. In general, you know, that is really draining to me. One sometimes has to work overtime. As I said, some people, when they find out you can use the Goetia, will naturally assume that you can dispatch enemies at will and on a whim and can find them to the worst pit of hell because they are offended by a E-list post you wrote. While this isn't exactly true, it can make for some difficult social situations. People projecting their fears and problems onto you can be a lot less fun than people, cute people, projecting their sexual fantasies onto you. Because the Goetia is practical rather than just theoretical, people will get scared. You will have to deal with this. And if you start doing the Goetia in a serious and together way, you will have this problem. I guarantee it. I don't know if you saw this. I don't know who I sent this to, but somebody was just like freaking out about some crazy stuff recently, and I just thought, oh, this is just another example of this. I mean, I run into this every once in a while where people have these very irrational ideas like, you can kill people magically. No, really, I don't think I'm that good. You know, and every time I bring that up, people are like, oh, did you really do it? No, I haven't done it. But yeah, you'll have to deal with that. Number six, Tiferet, you will get greedy and distracted. Many of us are going to be tempted. How committed are any of us to the great work that we cannot be tempted away from it for the nonce by distractions and temptations that come our way? If we think, I'm not saying that this is true, but if we think that power corrupts, doesn't occult power corrupt? Isn't it a corrupting element? This is not usually the biggest problem that people run into using the Goetia. Everyone thinks that it is because of Christian culture and popular culture dealing with magic, but it's not. It is a problem. It's not the biggest problem. But it remains a problem nonetheless. I think people need to work through those temptations, just the way Jesus had to go into the desert and deal with the devil. That's me. If you don't think you can handle it, don't do it. But that is a downside to the Goetia. Next, in Pakad or Deborah, once one plays baseball professionally, how much real communion can you ever have with baseball fans? I don't know. You're out there doing your best to stay on the team and not get sent back down to the minors, and you see fat people stuffing their faces in the bleachers screaming at you. One can get really tired of armchair magicians when one is not one. And when occult organizations are filled with people who have little to no practical experience, and worse yet, this extends to the leadership of such groups, well, it can make you a little cranky. And if you want to stay on the same page as all the people who have no experience whatsoever that do not pick up the Goetia, if you pick it up, you will be in a different situation. Okay, as Marvel Comics have taught us, moving on to Hesed, what have Marvel Comics taught us that we all must know? With great power comes great responsibility. As you have been setting demons to tasks, so you will be put to tasks. Some of those tasks may include teaching the Goetia and other invocation-style ceremonial magic to scaredy-cat men and doctrinaire feminists. You have my deepest sympathy. these. All that power and insight comes with a price. Too bad. And yes, this is very true. You don't get something for nothing, and you will have to work just as hard as you put other people to work. There is no free lunch here. Now, number three, Bina. To judge from some attitudes we see in the community, people have a happy, happy attitude of the way the universe works. Extreme occult understanding, I have found, tends to disabuse one of this happy, cheery attitude about the universe. Deeper understanding can make one unhappy if one is wedded to a nicey-nicey worldview. Likewise, knowledge and judgment in human affairs, as some of us call it, K and J, tends to make the people who have it look a lot more like H.L. Mencken and a whole lot less like Deepak Chopra. Mencken was buddies with Crowley and John Branch Cabell. Well, Deepak, we won't get into that. But this is really serious. If you have like a nicey-nicey attitude about the universe that you don't want to examine, you know, you think everything's going to come out for the best and everybody's beautiful and everything's wonderful, don't use the Goetia as a system. It will disabuse you of that reality. Now, it may show you beauty and intensely wonderful things, but they don't tend to be the sort of sentimental attitude that a lot of people have. You know, if you want to cling to that, stay away from the Goetia. And even if you think you don't have it, the Goetia will show you where you do. Yeah. If you think, beyond that, you will find out where you're not. When you struggle to reach goals, you may fall short of them. The Goetia is not always going to work the way you want it to. You will run into failure. If you can't handle failing, making mistakes and learning from them, don't use the Goetia. It is not perfect. People talk about will all the time, but they never sully their will with specifics. Right? It's true. The Goetia demands specifics. And if you're afraid of making commitments like that and want to play it safe, don't pick up the Goetia. Playing it safe brings its own problems, and the current OTO suffers from those problems because it wants to play it safe. Is your will meaning to you in the smallest detail or only on a scale so huge you will never have to think about it, sort of like God? If so, stay away from the Goetia because you will find yourself in trouble. Likewise, if you are profoundly uncomfortable with the idea of creating change and conformity to your will, you should stay away from the Goetia since they have no real problem with that concept at all. Many people object to real magic on moral and ethical grounds. And every time I do this lecture, people have come up to me and said, I don't really think it's right to use the Goetia for X, Y, and Z issues. If you really believe that, why these people are even involved in the OTO, I have no idea. But if you really believe that, stay away from the Goetia. This is not their problem. They are like absolutely change in conformity with will. Lastly, the Goetia is not the be-all and the end-all any more than any other system is. It has its problems. It will not do everything. Perhaps there is a system out there that will, but you could spend your whole life seeking it and never advance very far. Good luck. Those are the top 10 advantages and the top 10 disadvantages. Well, since I've got some extra time, I wanted to talk about some more practical issues. Let's say you're on board and you decide, yes, Keith, I want to use the Goetia. What do I need to start thinking about? First, you need to have a time to do it. You need time before the ritual operation to prepare. You need time during the operation to do it. And you need time after, both for your psychic come-down experience and also to write up the operation and clean up. If you don't have the time to do this and really have the time in your life to do it where you can dedicate to it, don't do it. You know, a lot of people will say things to me like, I can't take off of work. I have other commitments. Blah, blah, blah. Don't do it. Don't rush through it. It's not something you can rush. It's not something you should try to do most of the time spontaneously until you have a lot of experience under your belt. There are times, very few of them, usually because of contingency problems with other people that you're working with, that you may decide to do a spontaneous working. Unless you have all your stuff set up and unless you're really geared towards that, it's a bad idea. You need some time to plan it. Time is also important as far as starting your operation. It's not so important in terms of finishing it, but you need to start your operation at specific times, I think basically due to the government of hours. Back when I was starting with this, I would set up a government of hours by going to the chronicle, figuring out when dawn was, when the sun set,
calculating the total number of minutes in the day, dividing that by 12, and setting up a government of hours based on that, and the same with night. You guys don't have to do that. You can go to Google. You can type in government of hours. It will spit out a government of hours for you that you can print out and then use. But if you're dealing with a goetic spirit that is solar, you would want to start at dawn on Sunday. You'd only want to work the goetia when the moon is waxing, in other words, getting stronger and not waning. I am not an astrologer. I do not pretend to be one. Astrology does not figure a lot in my magic. I have been criticized by this by countless people, some of whom I really respect. It's a weakness of mine. But I will say I have tried to do goetic magic when the moon is not getting stronger, and it has not been as successful. If I wait until the moon is waxing, it works better. And I think a lot of this has to do with just it's easier astrally to see this stuff going on when the moon is waxing. That's just my opinion. That's been my experience. Test it if you want to yourself, but you really need to have a lot of time for your operation. The second thing is space. You need a large enough room plus privacy and non-interruptions. That means no phone, no pets, no friends, nothing. If you can't set up a space like that, don't do it. Remember, you know, preparing a room and we were just absolutely excluding everything, disconnecting phone lines, disconnecting everything, setting up guards if we needed to. I had people who were very thuggish who would hang around and just, like, you know, keep people from bothering us while we were doing it. You need that. Doing goetic operations at night tends to cut down on those interruptions because very few people are going to be bothering you at 3 in the morning, at least if you're a certain age. It's people in their early 20s sometimes have people coming by at 3 in the morning, but generally that's not an issue. However, that cuts into problems because of your sleep and everything else. If you can't afford to make those sacrifices, don't do goetic magic. The next thing I kind of wanted to talk about was picking a demon. Pick a demon that looks like, if you're starting out, can help you with a project that you're working on. I know people who have a really bad attitude, I think, with the demons, where they call them up and don't ask them to do anything. This is really serious. It's really stupid because they think that if they just look at them, it's going to be safer than putting them to work. Now, if I go down to Home Depot and put a whole bunch of day laborers in my car and bring them back to my house and don't tell them to do anything, they will find things to do around my house, I think. I'm not sure, but it's not something I'm really going to risk. Likewise, I had a roommate in college named Mike, who's now a fairly famous mid-level author, whose mom was the mother of 12 kids. Mike was the youngest. And they had a huge house in Buffalo. And his mother was in the habit of just calling from the bottom of the house. Her name was Marge. Michael! And he would run down the stairs of this huge house to the kitchen and say, "Mom, what is it? I just wanted to know where you were." And he hated that. It drove him crazy. I see people treating the demons like that. Now they call up this demon. "Well, why am I here? I just wanted to look at you." That's stupid. But people do that because they think it's ethically safer than actually putting them to work. The next thing I wanted to talk about was seals. People bewilder me by not using any seals at all when they do goetic magic, but even worse, they use paper seals. Use the metals they tell you to in the goetia. People say, "Well, how do you do that with gold?" Well, you can get a gold coin and beat it with a hammer because gold is malleable. And if you'll see here, this is a goetic seal for Belial. And it's inscribed with an engraving tool on a pounded out gold coin. And we have more pure gold than they had, more access to pure gold than they had in the Renaissance and in the Middle Ages. So we have better opportunities to really use great metals. You can get copper really easily. All of the metals that are in the goetia are fairly easy to obtain. Make the effort. Make really beautiful seals. Why? Because you can reuse them, for one thing. This seal I can keep using forever. People say, well, what's an engraving tool? Well, you can get those at jewelry, you know, stores that help people make jewelry, or you can go online and order it. Use Google. Type in engraving tool, see what you get. This is not rocket science. But putting the effort into making this stuff really pays off. One of the first operations I did with a real gold seal like this, I saw the effect of it. I was amazed. You know, it's having one of these in your hand is sort of like having one of those planes, those toy planes that have a tether on them. You know what I'm talking about? They're not remote control planes. They're sort of like a half step towards one of those. And you feel the power of the entity on the other end, just like that, if you have a real serious metal. So make the investment. Don't be cheap. That's really my major philosophy in working with the Goetia. Do what you need to do the instructions exactly the way they tell you. Buy what you need to. Don't whine about it. I know people are going to hear this and say, oh, but that stuff is expensive. Yeah, it is. If you don't have the money and you can't afford it, don't do it. It's just that simple. It's the same thing with the altar, with the circle, with robes. Put the energy into it. Make the stuff really nice. Now, at this point, one of the things I kind of wanted to talk about was, a lot of people have this attitude that if you do magic like this with just one or two other people, you're crazy. But if you do magic like this with a lot of people and you call it community theater, then you're okay. And there's a tendency in the occult community, especially in the OTO, to turn everything into a theater project. And I think there's a number of factors contributing to this because people feel it's safer. They feel that if I spend huge amounts of money and have rituals that no one sees, alone in my house with maybe one or two other people at the most, there's some problem with that. But if I do it as a huge event with lots of people and sort of put on a show, then that's somehow okay. And they deal with the sort of transgressive attitude of ceremonial magic by trying to turn it into theater. Resist that urge. Too many cooks spoil the broth. The maximum number of people that I think you should have at any goetic operation are three. Three is too many. Two is better. And the more people you bring in, the more chaos and craziness is going to result. And if you can't do it with just two people, don't do it at all. You know, the third person can be there to take notes. That's often really helpful. Who are the personnel? The person who invokes is kind of like the traffic manager at the airport. You know, they're doing flight control. They bring in the demon. The scryer or the seer, what are they doing? They're looking at it. And if you're doing the scrying, you don't really want to have too much responsibility to do anything else other than just look at it. You don't want to talk to it. You don't want to be responsible for opening and closing the various invocations or rituals. You just want to concentrate all of your energy on being the person who looks at it. A lot of times, scrying is kind of like being the guy on Star Trek with a red uniform. Because he's there to show everyone how the monster works, right? And it can be trying. So if you are doing the conjuring, be careful of your scryer's mental well-being and sort of be protective towards them. Stop kind of pushing them out of the spaceship to go look at what's going on. And just, you know, I've had people just be like, okay, Keith, we can do another hour. Come on, come on, come on. Tell us what it looks like. This is awful. And you know, if you're really greedy and you're trying to get the most out of the operation you can wind up burning through scryers pretty quickly. So be patient with the person who's doing that. I ask you, I entreat you. Again, the most important thing I think to do when approaching goetic magic like this is to be really prepared. The more work you put into preparing for it, the better off you are. Have all of your equipment together so that you won't have to leave the circle. That means if you have to go to the bathroom, a tank for that, all of your incense, all of your fire, all of your books, all of your stuff, and it should be big enough so that you can move around with two people fairly comfortably. This is not that hard to do. The other thing that I sort of began as a kind of innovation myself was to come up with interview questions ahead of time. If you watch The Daily Show, Jon Stewart sits there with a whole bunch of questions for each guest. If he runs out of things to say, he looks down at the questions and has another question ready. Oftentimes, people are so blown away by the arrival of the spirit that they just, every thought goes out of their head. You know, this thing arises that they didn't expect to see. It's there in their room. They're totally blown away by it, and they're sort of stammering. And then if you have your questions already prepared, you can go, okay, here's our next question. Thank you for coming. What about this? And you can go back to that. If you don't have that preparation ahead of time, you're going to be in trouble. People often ask me, well, what do we do when the spirit arises? What do we do when we see it? Well, what does Crowley tell us to do when we see the spirit?
Challenge it.
Well, he doesn't say that first, Marlene. He says we should greet it with something.
Right.
What do we greet it with?
Do what thou wilt
shall be the whole of the law. Right. And this is interesting because then you can see what response the Spirit gives you. But this sets up some interesting implications. Do we recognize that the great spirits have themselves wills of their own? If we say that to it sincerely, then we do. So then people ask me, well, then is it okay to boss them around? Well, it depends. In certain instances, that may be what you want to do, but it might be better to find out whether the will of the Spirit is cognate with what you want to do. And if it's the will of the Spirit to help you, and it's your will to do this, then you may be able to work out an arrangement. And recently somebody critiqued this as saying it was a little too middle class and contractual oriented, where, you know, you're extending this idea of equality, blah, blah, blah. That may be a very good critique of what I'm telling you. I certainly accept that possibility. I personally don't like to boss people around that don't want to be in the environment that they're in. I mean, this is just my own experience. If you come to work for me and you don't want to be there, I don't want you as an employee, no matter what your skills are. You are a drag. It's not any fun. Go home. You know, and I have told this to people. On the other hand, the Spirit is there and it has an agenda. I would much rather want to see if its agenda and my agenda can mesh. And I think that's really the new paradigm of using Philema with Goetic spirits, that we're not treating them like these evil demons that we can boss around because we're good Christians and we believe in Jesus and they don't, but more that we respect them on their plane, we ask them to respect us, and we see whether or not we have things we can work on together. And I've always had a lot of luck with that. I mean, I don't really feel like it's been a bad system for me, and I would ask people to consider it just sort of as an operating technique. Now, a lot of that comes back to keeping the moral high ground. In the past, you know, you look at what constrains the demons. In the old system, you would see Christian names. You would see, you know, I constrain you by the gods of Judeo-Christianity, by those saints and those spirits and those forces. And Crowley has changed the Goetia in the New Aeon to reflect the metaphysical entities that govern our arrangements. So the question then becomes, if you're not really committed to Crowley's metaphysical system, can you use those entities to boss the demons around, control and constrain them, or even create an environment where you can work together? The Goetia is important because it tests that. And that test sort of goes on every possible level. If you're not fully committed to the system that you are using, the Goetia will find ways around that. It's like if you're an employee and you find out your boss really doesn't want to do what the company wants him to do, you will discover that faster than anyone else as you're working closely with them. So that's really what I've got in terms of that sort of stage. Are there any questions?
Lots of questions.
Okay, but thank you at least for this part, and maybe we can talk informally after that. Thank you.
All right.
So did people enjoy that? Was that
great.
I think it's very useful.
Awesome. I actually am intrigued. Yeah, just said a few things that makes me not quite so against those silly little Goetic demons.
Well, you know, again, it's to me.
Well, the whole thing that you brought up about, you know, it's like aligning the will and seeing if there is a commonality there is really good.
But you want to do that with every system.
Well, I know, but you know, I'm one of those silly little girls that always met these really nasty Goetic people like you, and you know, they would boss everything around.
Right. Well, there is that level of command, which, you know, I play with a lot because I wonder sometimes, you know, is it Philema to be bossing people around, or is it Philema to not boss people around? And at what point do you have the right to boss, and at what point don't you? And who gets to be bossed, and how? And how does that all work out? And that's a big part of Goetic magic, and that's actually what you work out in the course of it.
Well, and one question would be, are these spirits kings or slaves?
Right.
And, you know, that kind of relates back in the traditional magical way of looking at things. You know, the Hermetic view was man is a microcosm and the demon is just this thing.
Right.
Therefore, we have the right to boss it around.
Right.
It doesn't It doesn't have the kind of completeness that we
right.
Do.
Right.
So therefore, you can boss it.
You could boss it around. But again,
whereas it, the Plymouth model, I would say, if its nature is to serve, then
right.
Tell them what to do.
But I like to think about who has the right to boss me around and who doesn't, and who is a good boss for me and who isn't.
Okay.
And in the reality that we live in, most of us have a boss. You know, I don't work for myself. If I was working for clients, I would still be like, independent. I would still be, in some way, bound to them. Mm-hmm. And I have bosses that I really respect and will work hard for, even if I don't like them.
Yeah.
Which is always interesting to me. Or mm-hmm. I'll have bosses that I like a lot as human beings and think that they're perfectly nice, but I know are terrible bosses.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that really play out in terms of magic?
And it must have something to do also, though, with their natural tendencies and what they're good at doing. You wouldn't want to go and boss a dyad to start a fire.
Right. That would be pointless.
To what extent are they discerning with respect to accomplishing whatever your goal is? Specifically, you know, if you know, you have some goal that's partially based on some illusion in your mind, you know, say with example, you know, the direction of an organization, you know, that you want to support, and you know, you have a partially illusory vision of what that is. I mean, are they just going to like mindlessly?
Well, it depends. I mean, like Crowley says, we shouldn't like take what they say seriously, and he's like, don't. I mean, see, part of what I wanted to warn people about is there are people in an area in the country who communicate with me from time to time who do goetic magic, and they're very into it, and they have a particular goetic entity that they're in constant contact with. And when I talk to them about it, I'm like, great, that's terrific, I do this sort of thing too. What do you ask it to do? And they're like, oh, we just summon it, and then we worship it. Right, but see, the problem is, though, is I understood that because I don't know any goetic magician who hasn't started on some level worshiping the demons that they create, and I'm just as guilty of it.
What do you mean by that exactly?
Well, okay, let's just say, for the sake of argument, that we were to come over here one night and we were to totally do this amazing, just, you know, you and me, Chris, this totally kick-ass goetic operation with fantastic ropes, fantastic equipment that we put a lot of energy and money into and set up the time and alienated our spouses, and we just go ahead and did this whole thing. And we were sitting here doing this, right? And in the course of it, you saw a transcendental entity appear in the room that you could look at, and when you turned away and looked back, it was like television that was on. And it was showing you things and doing things, and like maybe there was noises going off in the room, or thunder appeared outside and started clashing when it said things. Chances are, and I'm just speaking for myself, I would be like, holy shit, right? I mean, it's like, that is not the average everyday experience. And the immediate sort of thing is to be in awe and just be like, okay, it's just enough that you are here,
right?
Because this is like totally freaking me out, right?
Quick, where's my list of questions?
Right, and you're like, you know, fumbling around with your stuff, and you're just shaking, you know, because this thing is like suddenly turned up, and you're like, shit, this is not pretend, this is not a game. When I turn away from it and turn back, it's still there, you know.
Right.
I mean, and to me, it's like, yeah, you tend to have this kind of like, I cannot believe this, right? And you just want to hang out with it. You know, you're like, oh yeah, I had something about my car. Forget that. Look, just like hang out with us, right? You know, like fuck all that shit. Like wow, you know. And that's really what I think happens. And you have to fight against that. And part of coming up with goals and plans is like, cool as you are, neat as you are, unbelievably outrageous as this experience is.
So glad you're here.
But we actually have this list of stuff we want you to do. And that's tough. I mean, that's tough to do.
Now, what about the seminar that we went to a couple of months ago, where McNovick and these brothers were talking about... So these brothers were talking about, you know, how they had established these relationships, and intermittently throughout the course of their, you know, sort of quote unquote normal day, all of a sudden X pops up
and you know they're you know in the middle of some problem.
They're familiar
with,
demons.
No, right. No, not familiars. No, they're in the problem. They're in the middle of some problem with work or
right.
a social problem or whatever. And all right. of a sudden, bang! Here's so and so saying, "I'd love to help."
Well, I mean, you know, success is your proof. I mean, if these people are doing like amazing stuff and have insights that no one else has and are just like you know doing great things, you know, hats off to them. Maybe I could learn, you know, from talking to them. My feeling is that when you start to have communication with them outside of the ceremonial environment, you're asking yourself for problem for trouble. Because I do not want my day interrupted by goetic spirits of any kind. I mean, I don't want to be sitting watching TV with my wife, oh, this is really funny, and then suddenly have something come up and go,
right.
It's like I do ceremonial magic to keep it in that sort of environment. And the temptation of everybody is to just sort of let it all lapse and have it intermingle. And I just think you start doing that, you're babbling on the street like 2 months later. Like, oh.
Right, another question then, you know, one of the things that was mentioned in that lecture was, particularly with respect to one of the brothers, was that, you know, such and such spirits asked for these little minor accommodations or sacrifices, whatever. Like, for example, the brother had to throw a chocolate bar in a body of water to
right,
get
right.
such and such
yeah.
spirit to
they
do.
Ask you, they ask you to do stuff like that all the time.
Whatever. I mean, at what point, you know, obviously, you know, blood or whatever, and, you know, at what point do you draw the line?
Well, we negotiate, but I knew I wasn't going to get what I wanted if I didn't do that, and I was content with saying, okay, I can't do that.
But see, that's critical, though. You knew how far you would go.
Yeah, I knew how far I would go, but, you know, we all have our price. I mean, you know, most of the stuff that they wanted, I had no problem doing, but, again, every single thing I gave them in this area helped me in some other situation later. Not out of I gave it to them and they helped me, but the act of doing it showed me things I needed to learn. Mm-hmm. So even if, you know, the end result wasn't that great, I mean, we did animal sacrifice, live animal sacrifice, and that helped me with a whole bunch of other problems in magic that I was don't look immediately related to it, but were very important. So I never had any problem with anything like that. But yeah, you know, we all have a line. And again, I mean, part of, to me, those sorts of issues can degenerate into what I warned about, which is the endless minutiae of the astral plane, which you have to keep in line. You have to keep your eye on the prize and make sure that you're not getting distracted into endless mush. So focusing on the tangible issues tends to me, kind of prevent that from happening. Is the box of books in the room where I wanted it to be? Yes or no? Yeah, okay, it's there, fine. It's not, no, I'm not going to concentrate on all this other crap. It's just...
How long do you usually allot to go at it working? So does it depend upon what you're planning? I mean, this is a critical question because...
6 hours.
Okay.
Is generally my, I would start the operation and it would generally, none of the ones we ever did went more than 6 hours. Okay. But that time can go by like that.
Yeah. So
you start at 6 in the morning.
Yeah.
But yeah, six hours.
Okay.
4 hours, 5 hours isn't unusual. Six is the outer limit.
Okay.
But it's never quick. And the people who think they can do them really quick like this...
You can't do it in an hour and get out and go to the...
No, very, very rarely. And the other thing is the come-down period. And if you do a lot of magic, you have to work on that come-down period where you're like, I can't, you know... And one of the things, one of my teachers...
Making big decisions in that first half hour.
Well, or just realize that you have to set time up to come down off of it. And this one teacher that I had always said, go to see a movie if you're having issues. You know, if you're having problems distancing yourself, just go to like see some, you know, what was the Red Crimson? That's
Crimson Tide.
Crimson Tide, or what's that movie about the submarine with Baldwin or something? You know, he was like, go see the, you know, the submarine movie, you know, and you'll feel better. And I have used that as a technique, and it is effective. Go to see some mindless movie, and you sort of like can decompress.
Yeah, so to occupy your forebrain.
Right, but you have to set up space for that, and that's the thing I think a lot of people get into problems with, because they don't set up that. They don't set up the prep time, they don't set up enough time to do it, and they don't set up the downtime.
Well, let me ask you, you know, you vote, they appear, you request, they say no. And, you know, then there's all this other business.
I've never had that be an issue. I've never had that be an issue. Here's the thing. People often say you have to test the demons. And the more preparation work you do ahead of time, the less you have to worry about that. I'm not saying don't do it. Do it. Don't not do it. And be polite about it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so somebody shows up and you're like, look, you know, we're not trying to be rude here, but we have to do this.
Your name is Charlie.
Your name, how do we do this? And you just write it down. And your attitude is always scientific. It's like, well, this thing may be what it's saying it is. It may not be. We're going to just take out the information and evaluate it later.
Right.
But I've never had, I found that the more work I do and the more time I put into things like the sigils and all the rest of that stuff, the easier the actual work is. Because when it shows up, it's like all that stuff is done. The struggle that I think people go through happens because they don't do the prep work.
Well, let me ask you this. How real is it, you know, this hierarchical business of, you know, king, prince, president?
It's an interesting issue. And a lot of it also comes down to servitors. You may find yourself working with servitors, and that's not as bad as it sounds. Because if the servitor can do what you want it to do better than the creature can that you're going for originally, we got fobbed off on a servitor once when I contacted Baal. And I opened the first Enochian heir, Lil. And we called up Baal. And we got fobbed off really quickly onto a servitor spirit. And it was okay, because I saw the train of people going up to the king. And I was like, this guy that we've got is as good as we're going to get at this point. He's fine for us. And if you call, like, Barbara Lee's office, who's our representative here, to have a problem with your Social Security fixed, Barbara Lee is not going to answer the phone. I mean, 99% of the time, she will not pick it up. You may get lucky once, and she might, but most of the time, she won't. And the staff person who takes your call is going to resolve your problem faster for you than Barbara Lee does, because Barbara Lee does not know how to fix Social Security problems. She has staff people who know how to fix it. The demon you're talking to may have a servitor who can get it done much faster than, because the demon king is somebody that's just, you can't talk to. I mean, there's a reason David Jones is taking two dead languages. Because the creatures he wants to talk to
speak those languages,
right? And if you don't speak them yourself, you're going to wind up dealing with new servitors who know English. This is my theory.
Yeah.
But that's not, I mean, he's not taking that just to be a wise ass. He's taking, there's a method to that madness, so.
Okay, so you did it. You brought up that Enochian word along with the Goish.
Yeah, I did. We opened the first Aether, and that was also what tended to make the work we did drag out, because we'd pile a lot of Goish, a lot of Enochian stuff up ahead, do that, then do a Goetic spirit, then close out the Goetic spirit, close out all the Enochian stuff, and shut down. And my methodology tended to use Pyramidos as an opening of the temple. We would open and then close with Pyramidos. And we got to a point where we would open Pyramidos, banish, invoke, purify, invoke, open Tuat, do the ritual, close Tuat, close Pyramidos, and we'd be out. So I would put Tuat inside Pyramidos as a technique.
Not just preparing the gewgaws and gadgetry for doing the actual Goetia, but part of your preparation for your Goetic workings was setting the stage astrally, so to speak, by doing Pyramidos and doing the Enochian air that you felt would best reflect.
Right, and we would do a series of the keys. We would run a series of the keys. And I would actually recommend using some of the keys just for beginners in the Goetia, because they tend to charge up the atmosphere quicker, open the temple up, and get it going. And so, like, you know, doing the first and second key, that's right. You can't go wrong, and then start the invocation. The thing I would really caution people about just is don't banish all the time when you're done. You know, it's like, to me, you know, it's like building this
amazing painting, you know, and painting it, and then at the end of it, just taking all the paint away.
It's like throwing turpentine on it.
Right, that's not what you want to do. And people are so paranoid about this stuff that they just want to banish all the time. And, you know, slowing down the banishing is really the whole, the urge to banish.
I think what it is that thing that you're talking about. People are not used to the fact that serious magical workings requires hours to get back into your regular normal reality,
Or some sleep.
Or some sleep, well, which would be hours.
Right, right. But it
or a movie, which would be hours.
Right, which would be hours, yeah. You need some time to...
And so they do these banishing to instantly try to reclaim something that they're familiar with.
You're correct.
But what that does, of course, is it disrupts the ripples you've just set in
motion. Right, but the other thing, too, is that people really love being astrally drunk. And they confuse that with gnosis and magic. And we see this in the OT all the time. I mean, there's people whose, you know, as Greg has pointed out, there's people whose entire, you know, life's goal is to be astrally drunk 24/7. And that's like, that's initiation to them. They are then the masters if they are like totally astrally plastered all the time. And in fact, you know, that's really, I think, where people tend to start losing it is just that, you know, lack of control and lack of.